Welcome to Criminalia, a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Welcome to Criminalia, where it's pirate season. We'll be exploring the lives and motivations of some of the most notorious freebooters throughout history. I'm Maria Tremarki.
And I'm Holly Fry. And yes, today's pirate is known for being one of the main characters on the TV series Vikings, so if you watch that, you'll know this name. And when the show debuted, Entertainment Weekly declared the character of Lagertha as, quote, the most exciting feminist character on TV. But Lagertha existed way before the History Channel. Maybe, we'll get to that. She was born sometime between 710 and 770. The Norse lands where she lived were where today you would find Denmark, Norway, and Sweden. And she was most likely born in what is now modern Norway. Again, probably.
We know about this female Viking warrior because of a man named Saxo Grammaticus. Saxo was a Danish theologian, chronicler, and historian who lived between roughly 1160 to 1220-ish. His book, Gesta Danorum, which means the deeds of the Danes or the history of the Danes, was written in Latin about Danish history, and it's actually considered one of the first works to record Danish history. It's comprised of 16 volumes. 16 volumes include both a mythical section and an historical section, and in it, he writes that Viking predecessors had practiced piracy and preyed on merchant ships in the Baltic and North Seas. He also writes of a controversial topic, female Viking warriors, including Lagertha, whose story appears in book 9 of his series.
Right. Worth noting, in case you didn't take note of those dates, he was writing a long time, several hundred years after Lagertha would have been around. So if I were writing the history of someone 400 years ago, I'd probably mess some things up.
One or two things, maybe.
And it's actually because of Saxo's writings that we know and call this Viking by the Latin name Lagertha. Her name over the centuries has actually been recorded with at least three or four or possibly even more different spellings. Each of those has a slightly different pronunciation. But to be very clear, she was never called by that name in her lifetime. So if you could time travel back to her and you said it, she would not respond. She would not know what you were talking about. Her real name would have been in Old Norse and pronounced something like Hladgerdr. In some spellings, that name looks a lot like Hildegard, which translates in Swedish and a few other languages into a meaning of fighter or defending battle maiden. Bringing that back around to the Vikings, Hildegard in Scandinavian mythology was a Valkyrie. She was sent by one of the principal gods in Norse mythology, that's Odin, to escort heroes who died in battle to Valhalla, the afterlife.
Valkyrie, she-warrior, warrior, pirate, shield maiden, whatever the name you use, stories about strong women like Lagertha are mentioned in lore that dates centuries back. But legend in fact, and as Holly was talking about earlier, names themselves too, sometimes have a tendency to change or blend together, and we're going to keep seeing that as we go along.
Let's also talk about a man named Ragnar Lothbrok. Lothbrok, by the way, that's not his surname, but instead his nickname. It means shaggy pants. We don't have a whole lot of data there, but I'm presuming he wore fur pants.
Yes.
That's just a guess. Ragnar is believed to have been a real Danish king and a Viking warrior. And he lived at the same time as Lagertha. He will appear again later on in this tale. But right now, he is a good example of a character described in the sagas, the stories and histories told of Norse gods and heroes. He may have been a real person, but his legend may be based on more than one real person, and it has a dash of absolutely fictional elements thrown in. For example, one of the most iconic stories about him is his fight with a dragon. We all want dragons to be real, but no evidence. He was, by the way, successful in that battle.
So why are we talking about name origins and dragon fights? There's a challenge here. When we talk about Lagertha, and actually a number of the individuals we've talked about over the seasons, history can often get in the way of itself. Sometimes the elements of stories and records are difficult to parse into what's fact and what's fiction. Much of what we know about the Viking era comes from stories that were told for hundreds of years after events took place, or from their mythology. There are some very basic questions here, like, and I'm talking basic, were these people real? Of those conquered by the Vikings who lived to tell about it, some recorded their experiences, and the Vikings were referred to sometimes as fearful wolves and stinging hornets. Although those stories were surely told with a one-sided angle that did not favor the Vikings, those stories do leave a record. They do also leave a bit of a timeline. Where do the dragons fit in? We'll have to look that up under fiction.
So let's take a look at the Viking Age and get a little more specific about what was going on during the time that Lagertha was alive and raiding.
We're going to take a break for a word from our sponsor, and when we come back, we'll clear up the horned helmet controversy.
No controversy. Bugs Bunny wore one, therefore
it exists.
Oh, Brunhilde, you're so lovely. Yes, I know it. I can't help it. Welcome back to Criminalia. Let's talk about how Vikings were, for the most part, pirates.
So first, as we get to clearing the misconceptions of Viking women, let's clear up a few misconceptions about Vikings in general. Imagine, if you will with me, a Viking warrior Halloween costume. Many Viking costumes come with a few specific and stereotypical accessories, at least here in the United States. What you can expect are a shield, a long beard, and of course, there will be a horned helmet. But the reality is that there probably wouldn't have been a horned helmet if you went back to the Viking era. Though there were surely a percentage of Norsemen who did wear some kind of headgear, it's highly unlikely that there were any horns popping out of it.
Historians know this because the idea, it seems, did not come from the warriors themselves, but instead from artists much later during the Victorian period in the 19th century, when stories of Vikings were all the rage. They painted what was described by the ancient Greek and Roman historians and chroniclers. Lore and art dating back to the actual Viking era makes no mention of horned helmets. And because things come in threes, the one and only confirmed to be authentic Viking helmet to be discovered also, that is right, did not have horns. Worth noting here, Victorian England was right in the midst of a huge imperialism wave where the country set up colonies all over the world and really had a knack for misinterpreting all kinds of cultures, both historical and contemporary. So anytime you see Victorian art depicting another time or place that is not Victorian England, it is always best to remember that it's probably not an accurate representation.
And the horned helmet is really just one example of how easy it is to fall into easy stereotypes. But we do know that Vikings were raiders. They were pirates. They attacked, they pillaged up and down coastlines, and they also attacked and pillaged during exploratory voyages. But Viking men actually spent much of their time farming, not raiding. Some surely spent most of their time at sea as pirates, menacing and plundering, but most don't fit into that stereotype, at least not all year round. Many men spent their time sowing grains, such as barley, rye, and oats, as well as raising cattle, pigs, and other livestock. Most of what was grown and raised was to support their family during that winter.
In general, though, they were seafaring people. They raided sites along the coast and were known for their big battles, as well as for their raids on sites such as undefended monasteries. That happened a lot in England, Scotland, and Ireland. They were also known for making money by trafficking women and young men, who they would enslave as they pillaged Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, and Slavic settlements. And then those people would be sold in markets across Europe and the Middle East.
Across the span of three centuries, from around the year 793 to 1066, during what's known as the Viking Age, Vikings lived as pirates, raiders, traders, and settlers, and they could be found in areas that we know as Britain and the European continent, as well as parts of modern-day Russia, Iceland, Greenland, and Newfoundland. Because of how we refer to them, though, the Vikings, it's pretty easy to assume that they were an organized group, right? But they weren't. Vikings were never unified, and while collectively we know them as Vikings or Norsemen, they didn't act like a collective. They were a bunch of chieftain-led tribes. As often as they engaged in piracy and raiding foreign lands, they also often battled each other. English kings began organizing defenses against the, quote, seagoing pagans, as they're called in one medieval English document that dates back to before 793. And to the English and the Europeans in particular, Norsemen were considered uncivilized, and not just because they were foreigners, but because they weren't Christians.
When Lagertha appears in Saxo's records, it's because he's writing about her participation in the battle against the Swedes when they invaded Norway. Her story covers several paragraphs in the book, and in that story, she did some amazing things. She led an army that would end up being the downfall of the King of Sweden. She became known for her warrior status as well as her bravery. All of this impressed the legendary Viking warrior and wearer of shaggy pants, Ragnar Lothbrok, who, according to legend, married her.
Not long after, though, Ragnar divorced Lagertha to marry another woman. Lagertha, in this story, responds by killing him and taking on the role of chieftain of the tribe. She became known as a fierce pirate and warrior, and she was called, and I'm going to quote this, a presumptuous dame.
So we're going to take a break from all of the marriage and murder for a word from our sponsor. And when we're back, we're going to talk about whether or not Lagertha is fact or fiction, or maybe a bit of both.
Welcome back to Criminalia. Let's talk about the Viking women who chose the life of piracy and combat.
Lagertha is not the only example of a warrior, pirate, Viking woman. Ancient stories from the Norse people include examples of female fighters. And it may seem like not a lot of women were involved in the Viking life of fighting and piracy, but there were women who were absolutely part of that aspect of their culture.
There are five Viking women who are considered to have shaped the history of the Vikings. So in addition to Lagertha, we know about Freydis, Brynhildur, Hervor, and Viborg. All of these women notable in combat and raiding.
Historian Saxo wrote that in the 9th century, because Viking women were not typically associated with the seafaring warriors, those who wanted the lifestyle had to disguise themselves as men to participate in battles. He specifically names their inclusion in the Battle of Brovellir, a legendary battle said to have been fought in the southeast of Sweden in 770. Saxo recorded that as many as 300 shield maidens fought alongside Viking men. Greek historian and author Johannes Skylitzes wrote that Viking women, also wearing the clothing of Viking men, fought in the battle against the Bulgarians in 971. That's after Lagertha's death, but it does carry on that detail of gender disguising that women had to take into combat.
All of these women are interesting. Freydis Eriksdottir, for instance, may be the most influential shield maiden we hear about in the sagas. She fought against the indigenous peoples of Vinland during an exploratory voyage. Vinland was the Viking name for the coastal areas of North America, in particular, Canada. As this story goes, she yelled to the men, quote, "Why run you away from such worthless creatures, stout men that ye are, when, as seems to me likely, you might slaughter them like so many cattle? Give me a weapon. I know I could fight better than any of you." And so it goes. She then picked up her sword and chased the enemies away. But, and you probably won't be surprised by this, in another ancient Scandinavian account called the Greenland Saga, this narrative of her story is completely different.
Lagertha was a Danish Viking. According to her legend, she too was a shield maiden. Shield maidens were Viking women who carried a sword and, yes, a shield, and who were known for their brutality and abilities in battle, on land, as well as at sea. So in short, they were warriors and pirates just the same as Viking men were. Or experts think they were. Here, there is one more point of debate and controversy. This time, it's a question of whether or not shield maidens were even fact or fiction, or, again, a bit of both.
Because there are so few records of her life that are dependable, Lagertha's life, too, is controversial. She is not mentioned in the sagas. She's actually only mentioned by Saxo. While we're telling her legend as if she did exist, there are also some historians who argue against Saxo's record of events, suggesting instead that no Viking woman ever raided, and that the descriptions of them doing so are all fictional. There's a quote to that point that goes, "There is no reliable evidence to suggest that women ever fought as warriors alongside menfolk, but it is known that at least some of the warriors of the great Viking armies were active in Western Europe in the second half of the 9th century and were accompanied by their wives and families." They go on to suggest that the women only would have been cooking, tending to the wounded, and in general, supporting the war efforts.
Some believe that Saxo's description of Lagertha is a blend of fact and fiction, a legendary character that he created based on the actions of more than one female warrior. He wrote that she was, quote, "a skilled Amazon who, though a maiden, had the courage of a man and fought in front among the bravest with her hair loose over her shoulders. All marveled at her matchless deeds, for her locks flying down her back betrayed that she was a woman." But, and here's an example of that fiction blending we mentioned, he also wrote about how Lagertha's ship literally flew in battle, where she saved Ragnar against the Swedish invaders.
Information about Viking women is scant, and much of it is questionable. Today, most scholars consider the available archaeological and historical materials about the Vikings to be insufficient to prove the stories about these Viking women, Lagertha included. You run into the problem that legendary stories are often from ambiguous sources. Sometimes there's just no recorded source of a person at all, even real people. And, well, as we all know, you definitely can't rely on TV either.
But I saw it.
No, I'm not.
But we do know that women in Viking culture in medieval Scandinavia were known to have been very smart and hardworking and really resourceful. Most women were wives and mothers. Most managed the family's home and tended to the farm while men were at sea. They were often married very young, sometimes as young as 12. And they had some surprising rights, though, for the time period. It was in a woman's right to request a divorce and to reclaim their dowry if their marriage ended. And they could also inherit property, so it's a mixed bag.
Most women moved with their families from Scandinavia to areas where Viking conquests were creating new territories and settlements. What we are sure about, well, what we're mostly sure about, when it comes to Viking women, a lot of what experts have learned is through excavating burial sites. The majority of Viking burials that have been found and excavated by archaeologists show that traditionally men and women had two different types of accessories left with them in their site. Men were generally buried with their weapons and their tools, and women buried with household items such as needlework and jewelry.
But some women, of course, did not fit that mold. There were entrepreneurs, some were master craftswomen, and some, like Lagertha, are thought to have fought in combat or sailed the high seas looking to raid and plunder. There is evidence that some women were given warrior burials based on the items left with them in their graves. Very recently, in 2017, scholars discovered, and were pretty surprised by this discovery, that the grave they thought belonged to a high-status Viking warrior was not, in fact, a man. Although the gravesite had previously been excavated, thanks to modern-day DNA testing, scientists were able to figure out that this warrior was a woman. And it calls into question, for many, just how much power and autonomy Viking women really had.
What we end up with is the history of a people that relies not on their own historical and factual records, but on ancient Scandinavian legends, folklore, sagas, and sometimes what other people wrote about them. Good or bad. So was she or wasn't she? I mean, we'll probably never know.
You know what we do know?
That there's a groggery to go into?
It's time to step into the groggery. So in thinking about this one, I did something that I almost feel is a little bit pat, but I quite liked how it turned out, so we're doing it. This one is called the Horned Helmet, and it's because... I can't imagine that Lagertha or anyone in the Viking culture ever had anything like this.
Right.
It doesn't
fit.
I'm pulling together based on our modern ideas. And also, I wanted to play with this idea of the concepts of stereotypically heteronormative male-female dichotomy, mm-hmm. which we know in almost every culture, there have always been people that fall outside that dichotomy. As we've learned, we don't really know for sure what the situation was with the Vikings because we find things that counteract everything we thought we believed before.
Right. The blend of fact and fiction.
Yeah. So the horned helmet is combining a floral thing and a spirit that is often associated with gents, although I know lots of women that drink it, which is whiskey. And this is one, Maria,
yes.
is a big whiskey drinker.
I'm paying attention now.
This is one where it is a little bit of a choose your own adventure, only insofar as I think whatever whiskey you enjoy is the right whiskey for this one, right? For me, I used a Black Barrel Irish whiskey, mm-hmm. but you could do a bourbon, you could do even like a Canadian rye. You could really try almost anything. So you're going to start with 1.5 ounces of the whiskey of your choice, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice, and 3/4 of an ounce of violet syrup.
Oh, wow.
It has a floral note, and you're going to shake that up in your shaker. If you don't have a shaker, just give it a good vigorous stir. But I like a shaker to incorporate the syrup always with ice. And then you'll strain it over ice into a glass. I use a rocks glass. Mm-hmm. And then I just poured club soda over that. And I garnished it with a little spiral of lemon.
Ooh, nice touch.
Yeah, just to give it a little. So when you go to drink it, you get this really nice combination of like a flowery aroma and also that little bit of citrus in it. Mm-hmm. It's quite yummy. I absolutely delighted in it. I will tell you that I tried this with my favorite syrup of all time, rose syrup. Did not like it as much.
I have no words for that.
I know. If that doesn't rock you back, I don't know what will. Because usually if it tastes like roses, it's going to be my favorite thing. But I didn't like the way it played with the whiskey as well. I preferred the violet. You could play with those, like different floral syrups and different whiskeys, and different ones are going to like each other better than others. That may shift. With your whiskey, maybe roses are better. But if you want to do the mocktail version of this, in lieu of whiskey, I would make a very, very like long-term steeped black tea mm-hmm. and let it cool off. If you are not averse to using bitters, I would also put a dash of bitters in there just to give it that kind of whiskey tang a little bit. And then the rest of it is exactly the same. So at that point, you're doing 1.5 ounces of that black tea with or without bitters, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice, 3/4 of an ounce of violet syrup, which you can get online if you can't find it locally. Shake it up. Top it with club soda, garnish with a lemon. Delicious.
Whiskey and choose your own adventure. I love this drink.
This is a drink that marries our two great loves because it's whiskey for you and a floral syrup for me.
Exactly.
So
it's our drink. We can go home now.
So today in the groggery, it really doesn't have anything to do with Vikings or Norse warriors. And that is why I'm calling it the horned helmet, because that also seems to have nothing to do with Vikings or Norse warriors, no matter what Bugs Bunny told you. Although Bugs Bunny can tell me that over and over and I'll be happy.
I was going to say, Bugs doesn't lie? Ish?
Bugs doesn't lie. Renowned historian, Bugs Bunny.
Chronicler. Archaeologist.
Thank you so much for spending this time with us this week and listening to our stories of Lagertha and unpicking the fact and fiction of what may have been the case for her and other women during her culture's era. We hope we see you back here again next week, because we're going to have more piracy and another trip to the groggery. Criminalia is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, please visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.